This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Why do you think so much has changed for you in the last 2 years?
I think, first of all, thank you. I think it's it happens a lot, and you know, obviously we both love sports and music and kind of, there's always that project, that series, mm-hmm. that ring, right? Some, you know, I think the NFT thing, I'd be lying if I didn't say, oh, I was at the right place in my career with all those micro wins underneath. I think that I understood it and understand it even right now, where it is right now, in a way that comes very natural to me because of my background. And I think it was just a lot of bricks and then the right macro trend. Because what I'm doing with NFTs, I did with e-commerce in 96, I did with email in 97, I did with Google AdWords in 2000, I did with YouTube in 06 and Twitter in 07. And I've been doing it all, and that's how it's all built. And I think the NFT thing is so hard to wrap your head around. It's more like internet 96 than social media 05, that it was just the right place at the right time. And I executed. While everybody was still debating, is this even a thing, I went out and put VFriends at the forefront, was an investor in the right projects, and also, if you really look under the hood, at the same time, while this all happened in this 24 months, VaynerX, VaynerMedia, all this stuff, really took the next step. And so 99.9% of people see me on social, but the 0.1% that really pay attention, and you know who those kind of characters are. There's a level of like, oh, wait a minute, that's like a billion-dollar company too. It's like there's 2,000 employees. They have 300 people in Asia. Like, and I'm the operator.
Yep.
And so I think, you know, I just think people have their moment when, you know, things shift a little bit. And I definitely sense it.
Yeah. And the thing is in this new kind of space that we're in, you could say something a week before it happens, and people will think of you as some prognosticator, right? That you were ahead of the game. But some of the things that have come to the surface and I've seen on social media, maybe not even from you, are you talking about NFTs and the power that they could have maybe 4, 5, 6 years ago, right? How much are you able to foreshadow from, you know, just your gut and instinct? Or do you think that there was this, like, real world that maybe all of us weren't aware of? Because when I think about how many people truly own a crypto wallet now, you're talking about 100-some-odd thousand people, I think it is, right? And I would imagine 10-20%, I'm guessing this, that are really volatile in this market are these same sharks. So there had to have been so few 5, 6, 7 years ago. What was it that you were aware of?
The thing that you're referring to is something I talked about in 2011, which was really based on Farmville. So what I do very well is understand human behavior and what things are consistently true. And when I saw people buying sheep on Facebook for the Farmville flex in their newsfeed, then 2010, 11, then is when I decided, oh my God, people are going to do things in digital the way we do in real life. The reason the Rolex and the Lambo and the Birka bag and the rare Nikes mean so much is it's a form of communication. Mm-hmm. You're just talking.
Yeah.
You're just talking, right? When you know, we've worked really hard to be in spots where we're running in certain circles. Like when you're sitting courtside at an NBA game, people are dressed to communicate. Whether they're like me, which is like t-shirt and jeans and what the fuck, who gives a shit, or they go to the 11, we're both communicating. I'm communicating like, hey, I'm not that fancy, come say what's up. Other people are communicating like, I work really hard and always wanted this, and everything in between.
Yep.
And so communication is what I'm good at. Really, that's what I'm good at, and why humans do it. So some of the stuff that has popped up in social, it's, you know, it's not that I knew that NFTs were gonna be the thing. The blockchain hadn't really even hit when I started realizing, but it is why I understood social better than most people on earth. I knew that blue check mark was gonna matter.
Yeah.
I knew how many followers you had were gonna matter because that's how humans are wired. When I saw CryptoKitties in 17, I saw for a hot second and it really caught my attention. And this is where the story gets stinky. I just don't really even remember why I didn't see it all the way through. Got busy. Who remembers why? I just can't recall. But I remember for a hot second, I was like, huh? And then when NBA Top Shot, I met with Roham the spring before it hit in the fall of 2000. And he was breaking down. And ironically, I didn't know this when Fred Wilson introduced me. I didn't know he was the CryptoKitties guy. So I sat there. I remember I was outside. There was like a bee almost stung me. It was like the summer. On a Zoom, and it started really coming together. I remember telling him, I can't wait to see what happens with Top Shot. Top Shot comes out and hits. I'm very heavy in sports card at the time. I'm watching it. I'm busy because it's Q4 and Vayner is really rolling now. We just got out of COVID and I'm seeing like, oh shit. It's almost like we got knocked down in the first round, but like now we're about to win this fight. That's how I felt in November of that March. Like in March, I was super scared. All our clients are telling me they're not paying for a while. And then by September, October, like, wait, we're gonna grow in 21. So it was like kind of a little, that was interesting. So I didn't really have time. And then the year ended and I finally had time because of Christmas holiday season. And I really looked, and when I saw CryptoPunks and I went on Twitter and I went to some Discords and I read a couple of blog posts, mediums, and I was like, oh, and that's, you know, that's A&Rs. I really associate with A&Rs.
Yeah.
I'm not a music A&R. Mike Boyd is, which is why I always have these people in here early. But in macro business and culture, I'm a very good kind of culture, human being, pop culture A&R. Yep. And I could just sense it was going to happen. And one of the reasons I could sense it was all the way back to some of the videos that are populating now, I already knew. Which is why Roblox and Minecraft and Fortnite made sense to me. I'm like, oh, that Fortnite skin, that's a flex. Yeah. That's a communication. Yeah. Of course people are gonna spend $50 for that. And one of the easiest ways to communicate NFTs to people that don't get it are people that have 6 to 12-year-olds and ask them if they've ever paid for anything inside of a video game. They said, of course, they understand that. I'm like, well, the blockchain is the world's video game. Mm-hmm. And it's going to really matter.
Yeah. It's so I can relate to so much of it. It's my timeline is very similar, and I think at one point in that timeline you became my guide and to so many other people. And I remember at the same point in that fall of 20 realizing that this was my ability to grow a platform. And instead of trying to create new business or try to keep up with every new transaction and have buy early and sell high, I covered it all, you know, and that really was my way of growing the platform. I also met Roham in 16 and 17. Mm. Remember not quite understanding CryptoKitties. I remember Steph Curry was actually pretty early into it, so KD and I saw it at the same time. And then meeting Roham again in March and April and having the same reaction. And it's funny because sports clearly at that time really gave him the fuel for Top Shot.
Yeah.
But it really became the like first person in educating mainstream population. It was the transactions and the volatility of a Rob Gronkowski NFT.
Yep.
It was trading cards and people starting to understand how that value was created by what was happening in the real world, which is why I want to ask you, why do you think people are having such a hard time understanding NFTs when, to me, version one of the internet and version two, comparative to the time, was way harder to understand how you could get on to a website.
Because most people didn't live in 1995 from a business and human anthropology perspective.
Yeah.
There's most people that are watching this, and most people on Earth in 1995, 6, 7, weren't in the business of thinking about everybody doing something. They were either a kid in college who was just happy that the internet let them not go to the library, a grown-up that didn't get it and didn't want to put their credit. I mean, right now everyone's like, Gary, this isn't going to work. They're scams. I'm like, doo-doo-doo, enter. And I show them Wall Street Journal. The internet won't succeed because of credit card scams. Mm-hmm. History just repeats itself. The reason people are struggling, really, there's actually something fascinating. I would say social media web 2 was less insane than 1 and 3. Other than people didn't understand that people wanted to talk to each other all the time about everything and everything.
Yeah, they didn't know the effect.
Right. I will never forget this. 06, I am like Twitter's Pied Piper. 07, every combo. And literally 9 out of 10 people would say to me, but who would care if you're having a pizza? Who gives a shit if you're walking the dog? And every time I would answer, everyone. And they would be like, what? They would think it was so great. And I was like, you don't get it. It's actually how it works.
Yeah.
Why do you think people care about everything? Why do you think we have traffic on the other side of the road when there's an accident on the other side? Everyone's got to look.
Yeah.
Rubberneck. You got to look.
Yeah.
Why?
Yes.
Like, why are we gonna, like, why do we got to do that? It's what we do. But one in three were crazy. With one, the world had never had anything like this in technology. There was home computers, but this was the internet, and people were bringing their real world brain to the internet, and everyone struggled. Mm-hmm. Everyone struggled with one. It took time.
Yep.
Email, credit card. 95 to 2007, 2002, that 7-year window, a lot of people went from, I'll never use the internet.
Yeah.
I'll never have an email like that, right? The reason everyone is struggling with Web3 right now in the blockchain is everyone's bringing their internet brain to the blockchain. The reason the big joke of, well, I'll right click and save it, is because that's an internet action.
Yeah.
On the internet, you can't own anything digital. People just become accustomed to that. As a matter of fact, you remember this, we have this age share thing that we have that really, when YouTube hit, people were freaked out because intellectual property. Remember, it was like, no, like, yeah. They were taking, YouTube was taking down, like, the Simpsons, but then it became like everybody had access to everyone's intellectual property. Web3 takes it all the way back.
Yep.
Now somebody really does own it. When, you know, I was on CNBC the other day, they're like, Gary, like, I can right click and save it. I'm like, I could take a photo outside
yeah.
with a Lambo and say it's mine. Doesn't mean it's mine.
Yeah.
You can right click and save all you want.
You know, that point right there, I think is, when I heard you say that and talked about, like, if you stood in front of somebody's house, took a picture of it, it was the same analogy as saying, well, I could take a screenshot of
yeah.
my CryptoPunk. That to me was like game over. It makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, everything in the physical is so arbitrary. There'd be no way to explain it to someone.
Not to mention fake Rolex, fake Gucci belts, fake. There's the biggest celebrities in the world showing up on Instagram in my feed called out for fake sneakers, and they don't even realize it because experts are like, it is so much easier to have fake in the real world and on the internet than it is on the blockchain. The blockchain is a ledger of affirmation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And once everyone understands that, it's all going there.
Yeah.
Because that is a huge new variable.
And the arbitrage, I think, was really twisting people up. But the arbitrage of art in general, I went to the Basquiat exhibit 2 weeks ago, and you know, it's incredible. But if you told someone from another planet to take a look at that and explain why that had more value than something else, or why my 8-year-old said, I could do that, like pointed to that painting. And she meant it in that I could literally draw that.
Jackson Pollock, for sure, everyone yeah, can do.
That was your example, too. That really
I mean, Jackson Pollock's a $100 million piece of art. Like, it is really for real. Like, that one, like, for real.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to me, yes. But I think the comp that people need to hear, and it's why I keep saying 98% of projects are going to zero, is more internet stock. We had internet companies worth $43 billion mm-hmm. in 1997. $43 billion. This is before inflation. This is 20.
Yeah, AOL.
I mean, but there was companies that went to zero.
Yeah.
$43 billion, $17 billion, $29 billion to zero yeah. in 3 years. That's what's happening right now. When you have a macro trend, this is why it's called a gold rush. People in this country, right here, people that lived right here, took their whole families for 3 weeks, 5 weeks, whatever it took to get a horse to California because they heard about the gold rush. People act irrational when something major is happening. Mm-hmm. The internet was major. So what happened? Pets.com and all these companies got valued at numbers that were so insane. Today, the Chewy.com that is the Pets.com is not worth what the valuation was on an idea in 97. Right now, we have NFTs that are worth too much money because the founders, me included, I have a $500 million market cap with BeFriends. I have a lot of work to do to justify that.
Yep.
I think I'm up for the task. But I think a lot of people are not going to be, and so we need a correction, and we've already had some of that.
Yeah.
I think we're in a much better place today where things are like a little more calm. Not every project sells out in a second.
Yeah.
Not every time somebody changes their profile picture to the thing, it explodes. It's a little bit more mature. And so the reason the numbers confused everybody, like you bought that ape for this much and now it's worth 200,000, that's because of the gold rush. That happened with the internet. But to remind everybody, when the internet stocks crashed, like NFT correction will happen as well. Amazon was sitting there for $6 a share. Like that was a good move. eBay was there, PayPal was there, and I know for fact, as long as I stay healthy, VFriends will get dragged down with everything else, but will rise because I'm going to execute. Yeah. And there's going to be 15 to 50 other executors and operators and capable executives who are going to take these projects of this era and be out there in 2030, and then 98% won't.
Yeah, but isn't that probably what the odds are in the real world
too? Yes. And the real world, every time there is something of a hysteria, the housing crisis is. I mean, it's about to happen in real estate right now.
Yeah.
We're getting recorrected. Interest rates are up. Money's not zero. We're getting back into the world. People are recalibrating where they live, Zoom this, office, gotta be in the office, don't have to be in the office. Inevitably, yeah, that's gonna recorrect things. And some markets are gonna go up, some markets are gonna go down. That's just life.
Yeah. Well, all right, so sticking with NFTs and getting your kind of perspective on some of the moments over the last 2 years that have really added to the hysteria, as you say, mm-hmm, but have now created incredible businesses. When was the first time you were aware of Bored Ape? Tell me what you think about what its impact has been, the future of it, and yeah, tell me, you know, your overall thoughts.
So Bored Ape is a really fun story for me. I was launching, oh, this is insane. I was launching VFriends a year ago today, 5-5, because that's my number. And what happened was right around 5-1, 4 days earlier, I was like, we're not ready. And I'm not sure this tech is right. I'm like, I gotta push it a week. So that sucked.
Yeah.
From February to May 5th, I had onboarded an ungodly amount of people into Ethereum and the blockchain. Like, I was very proud of that. That's probably one of the biggest impacts I had in 2021. I was taking my audience and teaching them, this is what a MetaMask is. Mm-hmm. Do not give out your seed phrase. Like, serious 101 stuff, yeah, stuff that we still have to be doing. Yeah. So I had this big Discord, everyone was hyped. 5-5, this, that, the other thing. All of a sudden, we get pushed. I don't know what the exact timing is. I have to look it up. I'm sure they'll celebrate it too. But somewhere in late April to May 12th, Bored Ape came out. And I remember Jimmy from NFT 42, which was the company that helped me build my tech and infrastructure, went in deep and liked it. And we were talking about all the projects at that point. And I remember looking at it, and the first thing I thought was like, those look cool. Remember it vividly. I'm like, those look cool. But I was so in my, like, 18 hours a day to get VF1 off the ground. And the next thing I saw was in my Discord, some people were like, hey, VFriends is delayed. I think I'm gonna buy one of these Bored Apes. And I remember jumping in being like, that's awesome. Like I wanted to make sure everyone knew, like, you should do that. Like, it's not just, this is about bigger than VFriends. Like, if you, and so that was the second thing I thought. To watch what they've done in 1 year is profound. I think Bored Ape is obviously the singular most important IP brand right now in the NFT space. Different than VFriends, I think in Pokemon, Disney, Nickelodeon terms, Sesame Street, I think Bored Ape has captured the supreme palace Kith energy. Mm-hmm. Like, it's cool,
yeah,
right? So it's not only the biggest, it plays in a way that goes more street brand than, you know, kind of cool. Obviously, along the way, Guy Oseri got involved, who obviously both of us know, and like anybody who's been in the business world or pop culture world, that's a lot of energy and a lot of talent that's been brought to the table. They've done an unbelievable job in not only making Bored Ape the bomb, but Mutant, Kennel Club, now they just did their land, which has profound economics behind it. So where they find themselves right now is they're the AOL and Yahoo of this moment, right?
Yeah.
Right? They're the Facebook and MySpace of this moment, right? What they want to do now is execute for the next 5 years to be Facebook, not Friendster. What they want to execute now is to be Yahoo, even though Google came along and won that game 6 years later. But at the time, Yahoo fended off Ask Jeeves, fended off Dogpile, Info, like there's all these other, yeah, search engines. They have found themselves at the top, just like those companies. Facebook got huge. I remember everybody made fun of me when I invested in Facebook at $1 billion. They're like, that's the stupidest thing you ever did. I'm like, we'll see. That's where they're at now, right? They have a huge valuation. They are the ones. They're the ones everybody knows. In mainstream, the more people know about that one than any. They went out and bought the CryptoPunks IP. You know, like, they've done so, Larva Labs' projects, CryptoPunks and Meebits. They've done so many things right, which is why they've earned where they sit in the lexicon. And now I'm sure they're sitting around and saying, all right, now, it's almost like now the work begins.
Yep.
We got this huge valuation, we've got all eyes on us, it's ours to lose.
Yep.
And that's a fun, high pressure place to be, but it's I'm just very happy for them.
And before we move on, what happened the other day with the other side metaverse launch?
Well, I think what you're probably referring to is there was really big gas wars.
Yeah.
And so, and it's funny the way they reacted to it, and they've reacted, like Ethereum is not built for high demand items because of the way gas is structured, the way it's all structured, and no question that is Ethereum's biggest vulnerability. People have to pay gas to get their transaction done, and when there's high demand, the gas gets very expensive. And what people don't understand when they first get into it is you go to pay for it, you pay the gas, you might not get it if all the 10,000 items sell, or how many items before you get yours. Somebody might outgas you. Yeah. What people are very not used to, people are used to going to Nike's website, hitting, and getting beat. Now they're just mad. In Ethereum land, you hit it, you get beat. You also just paid in Bored Apes land place $7,000 to lose. You know, normal projects, you might get outgassed, use a couple $100. Still upsetting. I went to buy this, somebody beat me, and I paid $310 and I don't have anything. That's a tough hurdle. Yeah. That's not how Web 1 and 2 work. Number two, with the Bored Ape, it was so big that the gas numbers were so high that some people have spent thousands of bucks. So that's a challenge. My brother AJ had that with Vayner Sports Pass. Yeah. We had that just 3 weeks earlier. We had a gas war and some people. So it's a very big challenge. This is all new.
Yeah.
It's still early. The tech has not caught up. The education hasn't. People are getting scammed left and right. This is Web 95, yep. 97.
So you mentioned CryptoPunks, and I know Yuga Labs owns quite a bit of CryptoPunks, and CryptoPunks had its moment around the same time, and you were a big proponent of
it. I'm huge on it.
Can you tell me your history with CryptoPunks?
Yeah, Kevin Rose, founder of Moonbirds, which is a monster project. We were just chopping about NFTs and collectibles. We started talking about X-Men 1, more comic book kick. Somehow he's like, hey, have you checked out Punks yet? I'm like, no. And that was it. I was like, I'm gonna do that now. Like, it was literally, as soon as he said it, because I love Kev and I know he's smart, I was like, no, I'm gonna do that. Hung up, and just literally from that second, for the next 3 weeks, I got very educated on the history of CryptoPunks, how OG it was, 17, how it really started the 10,000 PFP project, how even apes and aliens and the whole culture of it really got focused. And I think around Valentine's Day in February, after that month of January, I was like, this is a good investment.
Yep.
I'm gonna do this. I think this NFT thing's gonna happen. This is the thing. This is Alpha Zero. This is the project.
Yep.
This is the one. And so I bought a bunch, told my Discord to buy them, told all my friends to buy it, my friends that have audiences, which has been documented, all my normal friends, and anybody who was in my way. I was like, you need to look at this. This is expensive. I get it. You know, it was like $20,000 for a JPEG. Like, everyone's like, oof. I'm like, I'm telling you. And at that point, I was just on the back of cards 3 years earlier. You know this. Everyone was like, no. And it really happened. So a lot of my inner circle was like, damn, I missed the card
just
thing.
Just got a Zion rookie.
They're like, and then, you know what sucked? Cards were like kind of crazy, but at least most people were like, well, yeah, cards are worth something. This one, I came at them and they were like, this is a tough pill to swallow. Some did, some didn't. You know, it's funny, I said this the other day. I still think CryptoPunks, for me personally, is the NFT that I have that I feel the safest with because of how I think history will play out. You know, my ability, Bored Ape, World of Women, Doodles, Moonbirds, all of us, we're at the mercy of how good we are in navigating the company over the next 10 years to if it's gonna work.
Yep.
Punks has something called history on its side.
Yep.
Nothing's gonna change anything from the fact that it established the 10,000 PFP, kind of like the modern blueprint for what pops, and I think that will carry weight over time.
Yeah. I think the fact that Yuga Labs bought these CryptoPunks and are now allowing the owners to create their own IP, right?
Yes.
Is that something that's part of, you think, the future of like the way these owners of NFTs are looking at building revenue outside of utility, which is empowering now everyone else to build their own value?
I think it's a profound strategy of giving the Creative Commons to the user. I think it's a great thesis. I'm excited to see how it plays out. You know this. brands for the last 100 years have focused on controlling everything. You know, you really look at the LVMH model, right? Like the way you become a brand is everything's tight. Well, by nature, somebody tomorrow could be working on a Bored Ape rum that comes in a plastic bottle and is shitty. And what if that has a little bit of commercial success? Does that hurt the brand positioning if somebody else is trying to do high-end jewelry? So I think the thing that's gonna be cool to see, which I don't have the answer for, is if you give the individual Creative Commons and IP ownership to the individual NFT owner of an overall project, you're gonna have a lot of different things going on, and it'll be fascinating to see what happens. I mean, some people may do really, like they have control.
Yep.
They could do anything. And so I'm really curious as a marketer, as a brand person, as a consumer behaviorist to see how it plays out. I think it could be a profound power because now you have tons of people working on it on behalf of the IP. I don't know if we've seen the ramifications of when somebody does something that's detrimental. And I don't mean egregious like a racist act or a sexist act. I mean like commercial success on a product that's like lowbrow.
Tarnish the brand.
Yeah, like real life. Yeah. Like, you know, if Nike, if everyone had control and somebody came out with a commercially successful Nike for $4 a pair, that would hurt the overall Nike business.
Yes.
And so I don't think we've figured that out yet, but I love it and I love what it means. You know, for me with VeeFriends, I didn't go that route, mainly because I've been looking for this moment my whole life. I want to be in charge of developing Empathy Elephant and Patient Panda and Flexing Fox and Swaggy Sea Lion. Like, I gotta do that. That's my dream. So I did it a little bit different. Projects go both ways. I think it's gonna be an and game. I think both will work.
Yeah.
The big curiosity elephant, pun intended, in room for me is watching 10,000 separate entrepreneurs, or 5,000, because that's usually what you see in 10,000, how many different owners, 5,000 different entrepreneurs monetize the IP, and what does that mean for the consumer?
Yeah. And all right, before we move on also into a new category as it relates to NFTs, one also that you got me excited about and that I bought and purchased one was World of Women.
Mm.
To me, there feels like there's something a bit more unique and potentially a bit more longer lasting. What's the origin of World of Women, and do you feel the same?
I do, actually. That one's different because the artist, Yam, she's just like legit.
Yeah.
You know, like she's a legit artist. It was the first like ultra premium female, like there was other female project, but like this was the one. It feels like it has a real soul.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, it's just like everything in the world. Like, you know, there's an enormous amount of society, men included, not just women, that are gonna associate more with that. Like, for example, for me, when I saw it, so I saw it on Minting, it was in Twitter, like I'm just looking at Twitter every day at this point for every project. So like 3 or 4 mentions that day. This new project's minting, it's called World of Women. I just looked at it, went on the website, looked at it in 2 seconds, like, it felt right, back to the A&R thing. And number two, I remember this vividly, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna get a fire one and give it to my mom, you know? Like, you know, I put my mom on such a pedestal, she's such my hero, that connected for me. Obviously, for all the women in crypto, here's, like, they're like, look, we're being represented, this is art, you know, like, so there's that. A ton of guys resonate with the art and the project. It just had all the ingredients. Another project that later after Bored Ape, Guy Oseri gets involved in, so now all of a sudden you have a lot of good marketing and business development infrastructure there. They've stayed the course. They've built a real community. I think she's a real artist forever. She's young. And most importantly, you know, again, pretty much not different than CryptoPunks, when the history books are written of this era, that's going to be the pioneer female project. It is what it is, you know, it is. The art is subjectively fire too. Like, I always think art is the eye beholder. Like, I'm very aware of why people think my squiggles, my doodles are not, but like back to Pollock or Warhol. But like universally, the look of World of Women resonates with a lot of human 100%. Beings. And so that's something to think about as well.
Social media in general, I think sometimes brands, individuals think that the rules are the same, that the roadmap to success is the same. And it feels like any new brand starting has this North Star of what they see other brands been able to build on social media. But it's a whole different world and a whole different landscape. Obviously, TikTok has rose to the top. But Discord is become in the last 2 years, to me, the most tactical approach to starting to build a community. Mm. Do you agree, and how do you think Discord fits in the future?
I do. What's crazy about Discord is everybody understands it, because even the OGs, like when I talk to older business people, my contemporaries, not 20-year-old kids, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s businesses, literally all I say to them is, oh, it's AOL chat rooms from the 90s. They're like, oh yeah, cool.
Yeah.
It's very easy to understand. Community is absolutely built in it. Obviously, it was big in gaming, so I've been aware of it for a while. It completely has exploded in the NFT world, which then, because NFTs have exploded, got people to be like, wait a minute, maybe you should stand up a Discord for this and that. Absolutely, it's where community is built.
Yep.
I think it's a great tool. It's fast. The reason Twitter's good is it's fast. You know, when you post an Instagram or even a TikTok, community lives in the comments. It's not easy.
Yeah.
Whereas, like in my Discord, I talk, I'm just boom, boom, boom. There's no friction
yeah.
to talking.
Yeah.
Similar to Twitter, which is why it's a strong product. So, yeah, I think Discord has absolutely given itself a seat at the table for community.
Yeah.
For sure.
All right. Trading cards, I think, were like the alpha strain of that summer of 2020. And then NFTs were the
yeah.
Omicron.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. That's a good analogy.
Or no, the Delta.
The Delta.
But trading cards will forever have a place in society and in this economy of collectibles. And I think even as we look at long-term assets and fractional buying, but it isn't exactly, in my opinion, where people were thinking it was going in April or May of 20.
In the same way that NFTs won't on an individual basis. On a macro level. So since NFT last year, very simply, record prices are being paid for sports cards every auction right now. But the long tail, the base cards, are not as high because you need wide, and so it goes ebbs and flows. Same thing with NFTs. Every project last year in the summer and winter and fall did decent. Like, people are just buying everything.
Yep.
Now you're seeing consolidation where the top projects are getting more of the market interest. And so, to your point, I think there's a bigger, much bigger thing going on. I've been surprised, in a great way, what's going on with comics, sports cards, sneakers, NFTs, and even emerging things like VHS tapes. So like people
like nostalgic collectibles.
Yeah, like people are really spending real paper on VHS tapes that are graded and video games, right? So now you have these six things. So what I'm seeing is a bigger combo. Two things. One, if you go look at TikTok accounts of 15, 16, 17 year olds, this is crazy. You have 16 year olds that have in their bio investor. 16. And like not like ha ha ha. And by the way, not just dudes. Ladies and gents, 16, TikTok, silly stuff, like they're high school graduated, like this is what I do for a living, like NHHSS 2024, cheerleader, investor. And I'm like, this is profound. I couldn't find a dude to talk to me about business in high school.
Yeah.
Now you've got everybody. So couple things. One, the rise of people saying, I'm an investor too, and then the rise of what they want to invest in. 22-year-old you and me, flat out, because of who we were, knew that real estate and Wall Street stocks was stuff you could invest in and maybe should, right? We just knew. 25, 26, but it was in the lexicon. But that was kind of it.
Yeah.
Like, maybe we knew about art, but that was some bougie-ass, rich people shit
yes.
that we would never, like, you didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
You knew that. Hey, maybe I'll buy an apartment and rent it out to people. If you were like kind of advanced and was around, but you kind of knew maybe I should buy 50 shares of Disney,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
All that energy now with the Robin Hood crowd of the Reddit stuff that happened during COVID, now you've got an entire generation of 15 to 35 year olds that A, think that they should invest, because even 22 and 25 year old me and you that thought about being businessmen, mm-hmm. I have a funny feeling we weren't thinking that much about investing. I was just thinking about making paper,
yes.
right? So now you've got 15 to 30 year olds that think about investing. Like the way you actually get wealthy is you invest. You don't sit on the dollars,
yep.
which is what people knew, but they were mainly finance people down there in Wall Street.
Yep.
but they don't want to buy a one family bedroom in Brooklyn and make recurring revenue on rent. They don't want to buy 1,000 shares of a good solid stock. They want to buy a pair of Nikes that are going to go up 2x. They want to buy John Morant rookie cards because investing is now more pop culture and fashion. They want to win on their investment, but also enjoy it. They want the NFT to put in their social media profile, and they want it to go up. That's very different than buying 75 shares of Turner, or, you know, or like. And so, investing has become pop culturized, which is making all this money come in, which allows for all these new genres. I had two people in the last 6 weeks in their 30s and 40s reach out to me saying that they want to become handbag traders. Two separate people who didn't know each other. Mm-hmm. Gary, what, you know, friends of mine, business women. Hey, you know what you're doing with sports cards and NFTs? I'm like, uh-huh. They're like, I've been doing separate. I think I can do that with handbags. I'm like, you should. That's exactly right.
100%.
100%. Set up your networks. Let somebody buy it at the Chanel in Milan, ship it to you, flip it in New York. Like, everyone now sees it as a viable cultural thing you do, and they just are going to do it in new stuff. So alternative investments, alt.
Yep.
The whole genre of it, that is a big deal, and it hasn't begun. Because news alert, most of those 16-year-olds with investor in their profile, they don't have that much money. But they will, and they'll be 26 real quick. And more importantly, when they all hit, these Gen Z investor kids, that's gonna be the culture, that's gonna be what's cool. And you know what happens, we're living it now as 40-year-olds. We're always in the pulse of 20-year-olds. Well, these 20-year-olds will be in the pulse of these 15-year-olds, and it's just gonna set the whole mark. I think alternative investment assets, as pop culture, just like fashion became fashion because of it, is about to be a huge thing. And the most scalable of all those things is the NFT, because it's digital and it scales everywhere.
Yeah. A unicorn in this space, a one of one, Michael Rubin. Obviously, Fanatics has gotten well-deserved press over the last 2 years during this time period. Michael built an incredible business, 80 million plus customers, sports-focused customers, and because of that had the idea to build multiple verticals and be able to give those customers the entire sports fan experience.
Yes.
And the Amazon of sports, if I was sitting next to him, I would say, could be what your North Star is. So Michael raised tons of money on different verticals and is now gonna launch with incredible teams, a trading card business, he has an NFT business, a gambling business, I'm sure ticketing and all different other verticals can come into play. A, I would assume that you believe Michael is the man to do this as I do. But what is Fanatics' challenge, and what do you think ultimately they have to do to make all of this work?
I think Fanatics' challenge is the same challenge that the VaynerX and BeFriends universe is, the challenge of any remarkable business that has been built in the last 40 years by the founder. The challenge is we just need Michael to be healthy. I swear to God. That, you know, my belief is I know Michael well enough now. I watch him for a far long time. Over the last 5 years, I've gotten to know him better. You know this. You know this very well, actually. Probably even better than me because you've run a lot more circles. I've been in my cocoons in my businesses. I get out there once in a while. There are just people that are tour de forces. They just are.
Yeah.
It is what it is. They're just going to win. One of the things when I kind of popped up and said, finally, let me get out there and meet people, because I was always in my lab, I was surprised how many A-plus number one players would shit on other A-plus number one players. Not because I don't get being competitive and just trying to be, you know, macho about it and be like, I'm going to fuck it. That they actually, I thought, believed it. And I was surprised that they didn't recognize that winners will always win.
Yeah.
No matter how much you talk about them at dinner at 1 o'clock in the morning. And so that's how I think about Michael, meaning he's just going to win.
Yeah.
And the reason I believe that is I really got to really actually know him because in the beginning of COVID, he called me and said, I'm about to do this charity thing called the All In Challenge and I want your help. And I'm like, I'm in. And I was like kind of scared because I was already, I just mentioned earlier in an interview, I was worried about Vayner and now I signed up for this All In Challenge and Michael's a psycho. We were on it 17 to 18 hours a day. We were going hard. And I really got to see, I'm a psycho and I've got that energy and I've got that operational capability and I got to see it so up close and personal that when you ask me this question, unlike 5 years ago, I would have to guess, I just see it too clearly. Here's how I see it. A, what's the concern? Can he put the right people in place for those seven big divisions? Mm-hmm. But this is what I believe. If he doesn't, he'll replace them. Yeah. Like, I don't think losing is an option for him. So I think he's got his strategy. He's gonna put the right people in place. I'm sure one out of five won't work out, he'll adjust. And then I think it just becomes, yeah, you know, just a matter of time.
And he did an incredible job kind of reshaping what the Fanatics brand meant to the public in general. Even the way people are anticipating the 100%. New verticals. It's not how we thought of Fanatics 2 years ago.
No, Fanatics, you know, 2-3 years ago was like, this sells me my swag.
Yeah.
Like, the Cubs win the World Series, I get it. Yeah. I want a Jets jersey, cool. Like, yeah, why am I going there instead of NFL Shopo? He powers it now. Like, you know, it's kind of like a B2B brand.
Yeah.
But I think all this stuff takes it into an incredible opportunity to become a very meaningful, you know, B2C brand.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. If you told me in 5 years, in culture, we're walking around and a lot of people are rocking like limited edition Fanatics hoodies, I'd be like, of course, because this just got going, then they added a little more of that. Kind of like Nike, right? Mm-hmm. Nike was sport, and then it was pop culture, yeah, and then it was over.
Yeah. Yeah. Virtual reality and mixed reality, where does it sit in the future for you?
I think the most interesting, complex conversation in business in the Web3 space right now is how many people are investing in the metaverse. And my belief is the metaverse is pretty far away. Meaning, it's not very far away, but when people are buying up land in a lot of places, I just caution them, not that that's not a good idea, Sandbox, Decentraland, great operators, a lot of good stuff going on, but timing. For me, back to looking at kitties at 17, but then jumping in 21, you've gotta wait for, like, I need to see 1 million people, 100,000, even 100,000 people spending 3 hours a day in VR. And I know, listen, Oculus has got users.
Yeah.
Like Meta, like one of, I own no stock on Wall Street except companies that I was in before they IPO'd and still hold on to the shares.
Yeah.
So I don't pay attention a lot there. However, Meta has me like kind of like looking a little bit because I know that they're so far ahead on Oculus and Metaverse that they, I think, are in the power position to actually win VR.
Yeah.
And nobody's paying attention to that. It's Meta, it's Facebook.
But it's popping up. Like there, even when you look at renderings of a home you're building, people are handing you an Oculus now to tour the entire property. It's starting to
pop up. It's, and to your point, the B2B world activations at Super Bowl, like sometimes the B2B world leads in some of these technologies because they're willing to spend the money for the, or the utility, right? To your point, home. Oh, it's coming. You know, my point of view on it is betting the farm on it to get consumer money out of it right now, which is a lot of people are doing, is gonna be dangerous.
Yeah.
Do I believe Ready Player One type life is possible? I sure do. We've got a long way to go between that and that. But I think in 5-7 years from now, I'm playing Madden 31 and I'm actually Zach Wilson and I'm like, in like doing like, yes. And 100%. I think it's gonna be fresh as shit.
Yeah. Five disruptors that you're paying attention to across all of business.
Oh, that's a really good question. What am I paying attention to? So, this could eat up all five. What I do extremely well is look at kids on the come up. Every day. Show me what the kids are, like I'm looking at TikTok and Instagram, people that are just doing interesting stuff, right? I'm always looking at that. It's funny, we just talked about it, but I'll bring it up. I do think that Oculus and the VR division, Andrew Bosworth over at Meta, it's sneaky. It's bigger than people think. I'm very intrigued with DTC brands that integrate with Web3. The perceived value of NFTs as an added value to buying a subscription of a direct-to-consumer product has my attention, and I'm looking for that. Show me a cereal, a beverage, a toothpaste, that when you buy it, you get an NFT and it does this and that. So that's a disruptor I'm looking for. You know, I'm paying attention to collaborative podcasts. There's something with that whole barbershop, like three impulse, like show me a podcast that starts tomorrow that has three people that have charisma with each other. And I'm kind of like, as a format, that's a disruptive thing. I think we live through the era of like one host, one guest.
Yeah.
The ensemble.
Yeah.
Right?
I like that.
There's something there.
Yeah.
So if people, you know, I'm trying to throw out some stuff that I hope people pick up on and maybe do their own versions of. I think the Ensemble podcast has got a real shot.
I think
I'm
so.
Sensing that.
Ellen is something of like a model for that.
Yeah.
Ellen podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, so what are we up to? That was
four.
Right?
You know, what's challenging about this question for me is even though Mike Tyson was my favorite boxer growing up, I associate a lot more with Pernell Whitaker and Floyd Mayweather. Let me tell you why. Counterpunching. It's hard for me to normally say these five, you know, I'll give you a great example. It's hard for me to say these five people or things are popping, but I put myself in a position to know what's disrupting. I'll give you a great example. Yesterday on the internet, at the Met Gala, Emma Chamberlain interviewed Jack Harlow, and they had this really funny exchange. And it went viral as crazy.
Saw it, yeah.
You saw it? And when it was going down yesterday, I was like, my God, I DM'd with these two 4 years ago. And I'm like, that's what I do for a living. So, you know, it's almost like you're looking at people and you're watching what they do, but you know they have potential. It's like ingredients.
Yeah.
But you don't know they're really disrupting until they're on the precipice. Almost like the mature version of what you said I was doing when we started this interview. Like these last 2 years, I mean, look, I've been doing shit in public for 20 years. But like, you know, and that's kind of how I think about disruption. You're just kind of keeping tabs on a million things.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally, yeah.
And you're like, oh, now this is on the precipice.
Yep.
Comedians, just as a genre.
I just said this to someone the other day.
The modern comedian, like the Schultzes and Schwabs, like all these characters, Dylan, like I'm like, man, they're capturing it. The format's right for them. It just feels like that.
And unfortunately, these two awful incidents have given it a little bit more of a of like attention.
The fact that Chris Rock was there, was able to pop in
like,
that joke.
Makes you think we're in the Truman Show. For
yeah,
real,
for
right?
real.
All right, we're almost done.
All right,
where is VaynerMedia today? What are the kind of verticals of the business, Vayner Agency.
Yep.
I know your brother VaynerX, AJ runs.
Yeah, Vayner Sports actually is the one Vayner company that sits outside of VaynerX where VaynerMedia sits because Steve Ross, the owner of the Dolphins, is our partner in VaynerMedia and VaynerX, and because that's sports representation.
Yes.
So we had to pull, even though it's called Vayner Sports, that sits out there. In VaynerX, we have VaynerMedia, we have the Gallery Media Group, which has 137 and PureWow Publishing. We have Eva Nosedam, Madison Avenue spelled backwards. I love that name. It's a production company that makes all our commercials. We have Vayner Commerce. And so we have a new company that we're announcing. I'll give it to you now, called Tingly Lane Trading. Tingly Lane was the street that I did my first lemonade stand on. That's going to be a media barter company. I don't know if you know that business, when companies sit with assets and they trade it to you for media. Really interesting business.
Yeah, cool.
So we're going to do that. So, you know, Vayner Speakers, our speaking bureau. It's become a massive company. We've got 15, 16, 1700 employees with 500 openings across the globe. We have 300 people in Asia, 150 people in APAC, in Asia, APAC. We have 150 people in London. We have 50 people in Mexico City. So it's a global company now. We were one of Ad Age's 10 best agencies of the year, Ad Week's breakthrough media agency of the year. We've similar to the way you said, hey, for you, Gary, after 13 years, I've been saying to everybody, I'm like, we're the Tesla to every other car company in the ad world. We're the Netflix to all the networks. And just like those two companies, we're getting shit on. And then everyone was like, uh-oh. Mm-hmm. When it comes to advertising, modern day Mad Men, everybody was shitting on us. And now everyone's saying, uh-oh.
I saw you say that V Friends is your legacy, though.
Yes.
Explain that and give us the kind of specifics of what VFriends is. And
VFriends is an intellectual property that I'm standing up around the virtues that I most care about: patient panda, empathy elephant, competitive clown. I believe in competition. And I'm really excited about it. I grew up really paying attention to cartoons, really paying attention to the WWF, which was really building intellectual property through human beings. And I think I'm on the path of building a Transformers and a Pokemon, and I'm gonna do it for the rest of my life. Right now, I'm a little bit in that two CEO life, VaynerX and VFriends, but I'm positive that VFriends is something I will be working on for the rest of my life, and I wanna build a Looney Tunes, a Hanna-Barbera, hopefully as big as something as Disney in 55 years. I really think this is what I'm gonna do, and I'm excited because I've used Gary V, me the human, as my vessel to kind of say, hey, you could be a fucking gangster, but you don't have to compromise your civility, right? Like, you could be a fucking beast, but you could be a nice dude. Like some of the things I believe in. Yeah. We all want to say some shit, right?
Yeah.
An intellectual property with 275 characters, like a Marvel, allows me to say a lot of things to a lot of people in a lot of parts of the world, every age group, and I'm gonna pump it.
Last question. As an entrepreneur, whenever someone says something out loud, even if people are laughing in the room or you're laughing, you mean it and you have a roadmap to getting it. Tell me your true, honest plan to one day owning the New York Jets.
Two things on that. One, I want everybody to hear this. I've been trying to do a better job, even though I've been doing it for a decade. I want to really hit this. The greatest gift in my life is the chase of buying the New York Jets. On the record for the 100th time, when Sally buys the New York Jets in 13 years and everybody DMs me and texts me and hits me up and says, are you okay? My answer is gonna be, I'm phenomenal. I'm gonna go get the Knicks. It's the game,
yep.
Right? The path is doing the right thing, building the right relationships, squeezing the shit out of all of my talents, being thoughtful. I could have never told you 2 years ago that something called NFTs was gonna become important and become a very substantial financial event for me. That's exactly what's happened. I'm just gonna continue to do the right things to put me in the right rooms, to put me in the right places to see things. And what I've done my whole life, starting from where I started to where I am now, it just keeps compounding. So in 5 years, when I'm 51, which is young as shit,
yeah,
something new like social media and NFTs is gonna happen. And I'm gonna see it, because I always see it. But I'm gonna be a very different animal than I was when I was 18, or that I am even now. And that animal is gonna eat more and do more. And something I'm proud of, you know this about me, I wanna bring people along with me.
Yep.
I wanna bring my inner circle of friends, but I also put out my shit to the world. I want people to win alongside me. That's how I'm gonna do it, and I'm gonna get there, I really believe it.
I believe it, brother.